everyone, and welcome to another edition of Turned Out of Punk. I'm your host, Damien Abraham, and once again, I'm bringing you a conversation with someone who grew up listening to punk, may or may not still be involved with punk, but had their life changed by the genre in a major way. And today on the show, a major guest. I haven't talked to him in exactly 13 years since we did this podcast. From the band The Hives, Howlin' Pelle Almqvist is on the show, and believe me, this is a fun conversation. More on that in 1 second. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, head over to the email address, turnedoutapunkpodcast@gmail.com. That is run by my brother and show producer and guest booker extraordinaire, Tristan Abraham, and he will get the message to me. Thank you, Tristan, for all the hard work you do for the show. You can also find me on Instagram at LeftForDamien. There is a TikTok page, a YouTube page, an Instagram page, a Facebook page, all for this podcast. All those can be found at turnedoutapunk on those platforms, and there's videos that get put up there, updates on episodes, and other stuff once in a while as well. So follow those if you are on those platforms. If you want to support this podcast, tell all your friends about it. I guess let them all know that you enjoy this podcast, and hopefully we spread the word that way. I play in a band. We are called Fucked Up. You can find out more information over at fuckedup.cc. We have no more shows this year, but you can order some records. We got lots of records. We put out some cool records this year. So find out more information over at fuckedup.cc. And that is that. All right, on to today's show. As I said off the top, Pelle Almqvist is on the show today from the band The Hives, someone that I met exactly 13 years ago, minus 2 hours before the recording of this episode. We get into it on the episode. And it was a very short conversation then, and it's a very short conversation today, but it's not for lack of good information and a good time, so you can find that in 1 second. But The Hives are back. They got a brand new album, which is going to be dropping on the 29th of August, The Hives Forever, Forever, The Hives. It is their 7th studio album, and a lot of great songs have been released from it already. The latest, of course, is the brand new Paint a Picture, great power poppy punk rock song. You can check out the video where you watch your videos, probably on TV shows. There's probably TV shows that still show music videos. It doesn't have to be on the internet, right? But probably on the internet. Watch it on the internet, too. And pick up this new record when it drops on the 29th. They will be coming on a tour around the world that's been announced, so you can check your local listings for tickets. And that's about it. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Howlin' Pelle on Turned Out of Punk. Pelle, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a long time since we spoke. It's 13 years to the day, minus 2 hours, since the last time I interviewed you.
Oh, wow. 2 hours. That's pretty special. I don't know what that means, but
it was the birth of my second child. It was the birth of my second child that day.
It's easy to remember that.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you also remembered because you were talking to The Hives.
You guys were very, very nice. I came right from the home birth, right to interview you guys at the docks. And we had a very fun chat. Cool. But I was distracted that day, and today I'm not. I've got all my questions here for you to. But I got to start this off the way they all start off, which is, Pelle, how'd you get into punk? Do you remember the first time you ever came across the genre?
I remember the first time I came across the genre was a band called Happy Farm, if you can believe it. It was my mom was a teacher, and they were in her class, and they printed 507 inches and sold her one.
She bought the Happy Farm 7-inch?
Yeah, she did, from a kid in her class. And I still really like it. It was that, and it was also like my dad, who was like into free jazz and like Delta blues. He really liked, he thought Sid Vicious' version of My Way was like the definitive version of that song. And he played that to me. So it's one of the two.
That is awesome. I love both the Happy Farm 7-inches are amazing, but that first one is godly.
Have you heard them?
That's oh my amazing. God. Massive fan. Well, you're from like a smaller town in Sweden, from my understanding, but it's like one of the hotbeds for hardcore.
Yeah, it was, as these things usually are, it was one guy, I think, but there was always, I mean, it's, I don't know if this is a cliche or not, but it's like a heavy steel industry town. And the only music that was like cool enough to like was like heavy metal and punk and hardcore punk and stuff. And there was a venue there that was like, you know, you're Canadian, you know, in the way these things are in Sweden and Canada, kind of like sponsored by the local council or something. So there was a place for like kids to hang out. But he would book internationally famous punk and hardcore bands like, you know, Exploited and GBH and Youth of Today played our hometown of like 10,000 people. I don't know how much they played outside of New York even. So yeah, it was definitely a thing there. And I guess maybe we assumed that it was a thing elsewhere too, but there was like a few cities in Sweden in the early 90s, a few towns that were big into that, and it kind of became a thing when we were like around the time when we formed the Hives. There was like a hardcore was like mainstream for like a few years.
I feel like historically, punk and hardcore as an extension of punk took to Sweden probably more than any other country in the world. Maybe Japan. And
Yeah,
America,
possible. We have
obviously,
a
there's a
lot in
lot
common with the Japanese. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I know it was pretty big, and especially like, yeah, hardcore, especially, you know, and I don't know really. I mean, it was all pretty popular, but it was all kind of seen as the same thing. You know, the punks would have leather jackets that said Metallica and Exploited. It wasn't re there was no real division between like metal and punk and hardcore and what you kind of liked all of it, I think.
I find it interesting though, because there are, I find distinct stylistic differences in Swedish punk, like Trall punk versus Rar, or what's Tang punk?
Yeah, there's a few like local variants. I guess Kang punk, which means boot punk, literally. It was like crust or like kind of that third wave of English, like discharge. You know, it was all the bands were called this something or. And that was a big deal. Like, you know, the more you sounded like Discharge, the better. That was the only objective. And it was very like by the book for like a punk genre. Trallpunk was like kind of the local variant of like whatever Californian melodic, like Bad Religion and that kind of thing. But it was usually like a bit kind of a bit comedy a lot of times. It was either comedy or it was about, you know, we used to joke there was always about in n it was a political but not and never a current issue. So we had like a song about the Vietnam War or something in the 80s. It's always like too old. But yeah, that was the thing. And I mean, yeah, I think it was just like all these like youth centers where you could get shows, so we could get like a show in a neighboring town, and then they'd play our show and that kind of thing. Like there were places to do it at. So, which meant that a lot of like playing in a band and playing music was something a lot of people did. I think because there, you know, there was a big history of this like dance band tradition in Sweden where bands would play on the weekends in your kind of hometown community center, and you'd go out dancing and get drunk and find someone to marry and spend the rest of your life with, that kind of thing. So there was always like lots of cheap musical instruments that you could pick up as a kid, you know, some failed dance band, or you could buy it to play punk.
It's interesting because you look at like the history of rock and roll, and like certainly like international bands have become internationally popular from rock and roll. Like it largely is America projecting, England as well. Every once in a while, a Canadian band slips in there, but like Sweden from the mid 90s kind of on was able to produce these bands that would hit internationally, like some of the best bands in the world in different genres. Like whole scenes came out of Sweden.
Yeah, especially like in it was very based on the American kind of hardcore. Like you definitely picked if you were going to do like British or American hardcore. Like there was a decision to be made, and the American kind of like New York and, you know, Victory Records, that kind of thing was really big, and you know, Refused was kind of a part of that before they became something else. And I mean, they were a big deal to us too, you know, seeing them in our hometown and stuff. We kind of, what we always kind of hoped to do was, you know, like a hardcore punk show. We'd want stage diving and mosh pits, but we wanted to be like Little Richard, but still have like a mosh pit.
I think when Barely Legal came out, it was such a confusing record to me because I'd heard you guys on Cheap Shots Volume 2, but then getting that record on Gearhead, which to me was a garage rock label, hearing the record and you guys sounded like a Spirit of 82 hardcore band, like a pure, like amazing hardcore band. But you're on this label that's largely associated with sort of like Epitaph sounding music in Sweden. And like, so you were kind of like a band without a nation, almost, it seems like.
Yeah, we were always like close to a lot of things, but not quite in anything. So we were like lumped in with a bunch of different scenes all throughout the band's kind of trajectory. Like there was, the early kind of hardcore stuff where we were considered part of that. It's interesting that you think it sounds like 83 Hardcore. So, like I think we were kind of trying to sound like the New Bomb Turks and the Dead Kennedys. So I guess yeah, that's part of that. But we played so fast because we just like playing fast. We thought it was rock and roll, but it's just way too damn fast. So it sounded like hardcore punk. And yeah, I mean, we were really into that. I mean, we liked a lot of different like punk genres, and we were also lumped in with kind of like garage rock stuff. We didn't really fit in perfectly with that either, but had a foot in every kind of thing, I guess. Yeah, Barely Legal was definitely like kind of a different band almost than Veni Vidi Vicious and onwards. Like it was a different thing. You can hear traces of what it became later, but to me, that's all, we were almost like a different band on that record. Same people, but like it's so fast.
It's incredible. Like I would put, and I also put Destroy Oh Boy as on my favorite hardcore records of the 90s. Because,
Yeah, I love that record.
well, like you were saying, it went so like slow. Everyone was going slow, slow down Slayer riffs. And I love that stuff too, but to me, the best hardcore is when it's raging.
Yeah. I think my hardcore band is the Bad Brains. Like that's my best hardcore band. And then like maybe second is the few times Beastie Boys played hardcore
Yeah.
punk. And I mean I loved the Kennedys and I always did so from the first time I heard them. But I think they do so many like that's like a world onto its own a little bit. Like I don't think they sound like the other kind of hardcore bands. I mean none of them do maybe, but I also yeah, I mean if you consider Destroy Your Boy a hardcore record, I'd say that's up there for me too.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny you say that about the Dead Kennedys because you're right. Like, no one's ever going to sound like the Bad Brains in the same way no one's ever going to sound like the Dead Kennedys. But the Bad Brains are a sound to aspire to, whereas the Dead Kennedys, I love them, but I don't think I'd ever want to be in a band that sounded like that with a surf guitar, with the weird lyrics and the vocals.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we tried to steal the surf guitar element a lot. That's Ace Frehley was like my favorite guitar player. We tried to do like there's a bunch of that on Barely Legal. We can tell that's where it's coming from.
But it's
But yeah,
interspersed
like
with
I
the
guess.
rage.
Yeah, exactly. I never thought of it that much about rage. It was more kind of there was more joy. Like it's a mix of joy and rage. Like it's fun to go fast. Like that was more the feeling than kind of being angry at stuff. I sometimes felt like, and I've talked to Eric Davidson from the New Bomb Turks. He has a long-standing theory that California punk bands were angry, but they weren't that angry because they were from California, and everything was nice all the time. Like. And he finally got one of them to admit, like, yeah, we were angry, but we weren't that angry. Where it almost like you're pretending to be angry. It's a little bit insincere. Like you try growing up in the Midwest or in a mining town in Sweden, see how fucking fun it is. See how angry that makes you.
Too much vitamin D in California to be that angry.
Yeah. Like, so sometimes that California rage sounded a bit insincere to me as
Yeah.
well.
I find it's also like the bitterness on the East Coast, like you can hear in the music. Like there's a bitter quality to New York hardcore that you don't necessarily hear in hardcore from Los Angeles that probably comes from the
Yeah.
cold.
Yeah. It's also something about like a New York state of mind, I suppose.
Yeah.
Where, it is kind of that. Everyone's pushing you all the time. But well, I was always kind of like my favorite punk came from provinces and outskirts, like or the wrong places. Like, I liked Dead Boys, and I like the Saints kind of more, maybe more. I listen to that more than I listen to maybe the Ramones and stuff, like where it wasn't from, maybe because I related to it or something like that, but it was always my favorite. Or like Zero Boys, it's from Indianapolis, like what is there actually to do there? I kind of always related more to that than coming from like these fantastical, like the greatest cities in the world and playing punk, I guess.
For me, like when I talk about like what I think the first hardcore band is, to me it's the Rude Kids from Sweden.
I am. Yeah, they that's interesting you mentioned that. Yeah, it kind of is a hardcore band. Someone sent me a clip from like some Japanese thing that seemed to be very early hardcore as
S,
well.
the original SS, I think they're called.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if that was that early though.
It's 79, I think, the original SS, that like
Yeah.
live recording that it was like bootlegged. I think it may even came out in the early 80s on a Japanese label.
Yeah.
But I
It's
don't know
really
if,
fucking cool.
oh,
Like, I don't
it's,
know if it's first or not, but it's amazing.
yeah, like they're all wearing the
And
matching suits. They look fucking awesome on stage too.
yeah. But I guess like if you consider hardcore that drum beat, like isn't that like the Bad Brains kind of, or Rude Kids before Bad Brains for that stuff?
Yeah, Rude Kids beat them by 1 year. And I think the Rude Kids, it's to me, it's how angry they are. Like that, if it's so quiet, why don't you play song they did about the Stranglers canceling their Swedish tour? And just how mad he
Well, I think it
is.
was the way I heard the story is that the guy from the Stranglers lived in Sweden and he wrote that song All Quiet on the Eastern Front or something like that.
Yeah, and he did a Swedish version of it too.
Exactly. Insnöad på Östfronten, snowed in on the Eastern Front. And I think they got mad about that, like coming to Sweden and fucking complaining, like, get out. They have that song too about next time I beat Björn Borg. Like they're probably more famous for that. Looks like a comedy song that was slightly later. But yeah, Rude Kids, pretty cool.
I love
I
that band. I
guess
like.
you just like I think a few people. It's like with all these things like punk development. It's like at a certain point you want to play as fast as you can, and then you figure out that that drum beat is faster. And I think it's an invention, kind of happened in a few places at the same time, maybe.
That's the thing that I love about punk is because you're right, like pre-internet, these sort of things are happening kind of simultaneously to each other. And like there might be a kernel of inspiration there, but it's almost like it's psychically happening. Like you said, the Saints in Australia and Radio Birdman. At the same time, you got
Yeah,
Dr. Feelgood going. At the same time, you got the Nerves and Rock from the Tombs going. It's like,
it's a bit like it's inevitable almost. Like all these things exist, and then people in different places hear them and make something of them. But I think a lot of it, people trying to invent worse Sex Pistols. We want to be that annoying, but more annoying. Like, how do we do that? Oh, we play faster and we're louder, and all these things. We sing worse. Like it's just product development.
yeah, like it's, and it's also, I think it's like a, I guess it's product development, but also like an arms race. Like, okay, if that was offensive, what can I do that's going to take it
Yeah,
to the next
definitely.
place?
And with the speed too, that's definitely a thing where you're like, you could sell a record to everybody if you made the fastest one. Like, oh, this is the fastest. Like, I think Napalm Death played in our hometown. That was kind of like that, like the end of that arms race. Like, how fast can we make it? Like, we're gonna win. And then you hear like, oh, it's the fastest band in the world. It's Napalm Death. And then you're like, I'm buying that record. Like, that sounds amazing. Like that. It's almost like a marketing hook. Like, we're the fastest now.
Yeah, well, you guys got like the
So you got
best,
to buy our record.
you guys got the best live band in the world, I remember. And that's like when someone declares you the best of something, as long like you're like yourselves, as long as you can live up to it, or like Napalm Death being that fast, it's great because it's like
Yeah.
then you can hang your hat on it, like we're the best. Who's better?
Yeah, and we had 1 year where we were the fastest, then someone else came along and. I think it's I remember that there was a lot of that. Like there was a lot of claims, like this is the fastest, this is the angriest, this is that, this is the heaviest, like as if it was measurable, fast is measurable, I suppose, but
Well, I think that raw punk
just
or,
fast on its own is kind of uninteresting. Like you need some emotion behind it, I think.
well, that's why the breakdowns hit harder when it's fast, and then you got a slow breakdown right there. You need that juxtaposition in some way.
Yeah, it was interesting because like our Pelle Gunnerfelt from Fireside records our albums. He was in Fireside, And they were like a lot of the people from the north in Sweden, I think, based their band on a band. Like it was a lot of, we just kind of mixed some stuff up, I think, but more so in north of Sweden, like, oh, we're gonna be Earth Crisis. We're gonna be, and Fireside kind of like, we're gonna be Quicksand or Fugazi, but mostly Quicksand, I think. And I think he asked Walter about it, like, what was the thing? Like, why is Quicksand the way it is? And he's like, oh, we just like the breakdown parts, and we won't have a band that only played the breakdown part. That's what it is. Like, that's, it's still a hardcore band, but we just don't play fast. And I'm like, well, that's actually probably what that is. You know, it's like that's the invention of Quicksand. It's like we just do that thing all the time. You know?
I think one of my favorite interviews I've ever read is this interview with Jamie Joster from Hatebreed, and they're like, "What inspired Hatebreed?" And he's like, "I heard Quicksand, and someone told me it was a hardcore band, and it made me so angry that I wanted to go out and form a hardcore band that was everything they weren't to show them what." So it's almost
Yeah, like
like,
this is hardcore. Yeah, I get
yeah,
that.
which is great because that, like you're inspiring them with both
To
swings of the
be something
sword.
else. Yeah, that was our whole like first couple of years as a band. It was only being influenced by stuff we didn't want to be. Like it was just not that, not that, not that. And what we did was just what was left. Like the few things that we all kind of liked, and that was the band, you know. But definitely more so than trying to be something, we're trying to not be a bunch of other things. But Hatebreed, yeah, I can hear that. You know, that's like the most, you know, it's very like on the nose hardcore. We swear to have no other influences.
There's not a trace of, you can look through my record collection, I swear to God you won't see any other genres in here, I promise you that. Maybe
When
a
the drummer
Slayer
who hung
record.
out outside our rehearsal space, he claimed he had 100 movies at home, all action. So it's kind of like that.
Yes. None of the boring shit. Were you guys a fan of Union Carbine Productions?
We were too young to be aware of it. They played our hometown too, but it was before our time. Like that was the late 80s, kind of. And we were, yeah, basically in diapers when Union Carbine was a band. I mean, we found it way later. Like we then, you know, we played shows with Soundtrack of Our Lives, and you know, that featured members of Union Carbine Production. But even then, we hadn't even really heard them. Like I'm a fan, and I love that band, but I missed their whole career, basically. I was too young. But Pelle saw them live, and he said it was amazing. I mean, it was weird. We had friends who'd seen them, and I asked about it. He's like, yeah, I thought it was terrible. It's just like this band. You know, clean guitars, whatever it was, like really loud, clean, annoying guitars and stuff. But I mean, that was also like before we heard of the Stooges and stuff. We heard of that. And yeah, you know, it's a great band, but we were too young, so we weren't into it at the time.
It feels like that
I'm
was
into
like,
it now.
it feels like that's almost like another wave that was happening, like Johan Kugelberg and Jesper from Endless Boogie. They moved to America around then, but they would always rave about
Yeah,
that
they were
band.
friends. I'm good friends with Johan, and they were, you know, from the same gang in Gothenburg and stuff. I think he was even like in the band almost or something at some point, or in bands with those members and stuff.
Yeah, I know he later played in the Action Swingers because that's in Eric from the Newbomb Turks book. Johan was the drummer and got really pissed off at Jay Maskus when Jay Maskus took his place. He seemed really angry about it still.
Yeah, he's like kind of a Forrest Gump of the punk scene.
Oh,
He's been
definitely.
everywhere, poked at everything, everywhere.
Yeah, and I think his influence on American punk is very understated because of the fact, like, well, like outside of the stuff with
I think all
Madball,
the nerds know.
all the
You
nerds
know,
definitely know,
all the
definitely.
nerds know about like Killed by Death and all that stuff, you know. Like I guess like younger people talk about Killed by Death style punk, but they don't know that it's like that's him.
Yeah.
That was his thing. You
Yeah, the guy behind Pavement's the same guy behind Why We All Know About Chain Gang.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Another guy who's kind of like a Forrest Gumpian type figure to me is Alan McGee. He.
Yeah, he released that compilation album that made us huge stars in the UK and stuff.
Yeah. What was like your personal interactions with him like?
Oh, we hung out with him a lot. Had a lot of fun. And he was great in like helping us maneuver like the upper echelons of music business, where we had no experience. Yeah, he helped us a lot. He was never like officially our manager because we were like self-managed and really stubborn about it, but he was definitely important, an important advisor and friend, kind of. Took once we figured out his accent, we took like a year. We had a lot of fun. No, he's a prince among men. I love that man. He's great. Still, I still like, I texted with him the other week. He's still like has bands and, you know, does all this thing, all the stuff he always did. He had like a slump for a few years, but he's like back.
I think his slump was when he was living in Hamilton, just outside of Toronto.
Was he?
Yeah, he moved
Was
here for.
that, or that must be earlier though, right?
No, it was like later on. He signed this band from here called Sailboats Are White and was
Okay.
pushing them for a second there. But
But what year is this?
2000, after you guys, but it was like a few years after that, maybe like
Okay, I didn't know
2010.
about that. Okay, yeah, well, yeah, he had a bit of a slump there, and it was a medical condition, and once he got it fixed, he was like on fire again.
It's amazing how like over your career, like I mean early on in the career, just like how many people, like even though you guys didn't have a scene, just people just knew there was something about this band. Like even though the first record sounds completely different, as you're saying, from the second one, there was already kind of like this sense that you guys were this band that was gonna like do something. It always felt like that.
I think that was probably the live show that we kind of made a point of wherever we played and with whatever band we played, we really tried to like destroy them. And after a while, people started noticing. And I think like the live show was how we got a record deal. The record company weren't happy with the records, but they, you know, it was still like you could feel that it was a thing when we played live. And I guess that also like translated as a rumor. But it was very like word of mouth, I think. In until it wasn't like there was a few years where it was like kind of just doubling your audience of 20 people every month or so, but it's like that story of the man with the chessboard who, you know, wants to double it with every square of the chessboard. It's kind of like that. Once we reached critical mass, then it was like for everybody, and then that was also so timing based with, you know, Strokes and White Stripes and all that stuff that was happening at the same time, and we kind of fit in. We all fit in with each other. It made it look like a movement, even though we didn't know about each other.
Yeah, completely different influences, completely different geographic thing. It felt like that was like.
Well, but it like it was, you know, it was bands that were like playing guitars and were not nu metal that were popular. You know, I think that's what that was, you know.
Yeah, and less so with the Strokes,
Well, there
but.
was definitely a punk element to all three, though.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's less with the Strokes, but definitely with the White Stripes, there's like a
Yeah.
punk
Oh,
thing
the
there the whole way.
Strokes are, you know, I'd say there's definitely like punk influences there. You know, it's really pretty distorted and fucked up, and it's like pop songs, but not all of it. Like some of it's that New York City Cops chorus is like that's like a good punk chorus.
That was the one song of that first record that I really loved, and they cut it off the American edition of it. But that first
It was
EP,
after post 9/11, I think.
yeah.
There was like a lot of pressure on them to not talk shit about New York City cops post
Yeah.
9/11, I suppose.
A couple years later, I think you were supposed to play Toronto with International Noise Conspiracy and the Explosion, maybe, or at the drive-in and Mercy Devils, maybe. There was a
It
show
was
you had to.
International Noise Conspiracy, us and Rival Schools.
Right, was Rival Schools here?
Was a
Yeah.
tour.
And you
Maybe it
guys.
didn't reach Toronto. I feel like I just remember it being the US. I can't remember really, but that was when we were supposed to. Was it canceled or something? I can't even
You
remember.
guys had to jump off the show. And I remember our mutual friend Carol telling me that it was because you guys had just gotten on one of the big British music TV shows and you're going to be playing
Oh
live
yeah,
on it.
maybe we had to go like do Top of the Pops or something.
Yeah. And it was like,
Something
oh
like
shit, this
that,
is happening for this band. Like
yeah.
this is
Yeah.
going right now.
We were so, like, we realized that what was happening, like, we'd seen hype before. And we were like, we were pretty happy it was happening because we're like, oh, once, you know, the hype settles, we're going to be at a higher level than we are now. But we were really cynical about it and kind of unimpressed with it because it felt, I mean, you know, the Strokes were such a new band. That was the first thing they did, just kind of exploded and was like the most, everybody agreed it was the most exciting thing on earth. whereas we'd been a band for like 7 years. And I think that, it made us more level-headed about the whole thing. I think, or like, I don't know about the Strokes. I don't know that well, but I think it made us very like cynical and kind of like, let's see how this goes kind of thing. Like, people are going to get tired of us really quickly, but let's just, of course we're going to play Top of the Pops. Like, that sounds fun. And Alan was like, no, you don't get it. Like, you're going to be like a big band. We're like, we're not going to be a big band. Have you heard our records? And, he was half right. We were half right.
I think it, I don't know, like I think you guys weathered that storm better than a lot of bands that came out of punk that got there were able to weather that storm. Like it breaks up a lot of bands.
Definitely. It's hard enough to keep a band together. It's hard without success, but it's also hard with a lot of success, I think. And I think it's we were I think because we'd like known each other all our lives, and there was it's very hard to get an ego in this band. I mean, there's an external ego, but the internal ego is like, these people you've seen naked since they were 6 years old. So what are they? I mean, how cool are they really going to look to you?
Yeah, it is though, like as a band, especially coming out of punk, to be able to retain what people liked about you before the success and try and still stay relevant with what people are liking you during the success. That seems to be like the real balancing act that people go through.
And it also sounds like if you think about it that way, like it's something you're trying to figure out, I think you're pretty much fucked. Like you're really gonna have to like double down on doing what you want to do and believing in it enough. I think once you get into like calculation, it's really difficult figuring out what people are gonna like next year. If that was easy, a lot of more people would make a lot more money doing it. So I think and now it's at a point where like half the people that interview us are like, all the records sound really different. Half of them are like, you always sound the same. It's like, like I guess that's a good balance. Like if half of them think we change, and half of them think we don't. I mean, I'm into both. Like I'm into bands that every record is like a surprise, and I'm also into bands that are like, oh, a new AC/DC record, I know what this is gonna be like. Kind of feel like it, you win both ways.
Yeah, and I think like I don't think your records all sound the same, but they do have like a sonic through line, which I think is what you want to have in a band, right? Like you don't want it to be all the exact same thing, but also who would want you guys
Well,
to
we
put
like
out
this,
a
we like the stuff we always liked. Like there's drum sounds we liked since we formed the band, and like stuff we agree on. The stuff we're not, we agree on that stuff. So, I mean, also, I think Pelle Gunnerfelt is a really important part of that puzzle because he recorded so much of it, and we like the way he does stuff. And he's from like kind, more like the indie world. Like he grew up in punk as well, but just his style of recording was really kind of meant for something else, but it fit our thing. And he's been really important, I think, especially now hearing our latest album, like. You hear his influence all over that and all over Venny the Vicious and all the other records that he was involved in. And I think even if we record without him, like there's stuff that we do that we want to do that comes from him. So all credit where credit is due, he's really important. And but as far as like the band we are and stuff, I think it's like the Eskimos have 110 words for snow or whatever it is, like our thing is like our thing. And if you're like looking at it from the perspective of like mainstream music, say, like it looks so different from that you're like, oh, it always sounds the same. But it's like, if you're into if you listen to a lot of stuff that's in the similar vein, you're gonna hear nuanced differences.
But I think it also is a testament to the fact that you guys know how to write a catchy song, because like even though you are making something
Well,
that
thank
is,
you.
well, yeah, but like because you're making something that's decidedly not approaching mainstream in giving mainstream what it wants, but you're still able to break through. Like watching WWE and hearing Walk Idiot Walk as like an entrance theme for someone and just seeing the crowd go nuts for that song, being like, man, none of these people would be able to talk to me about the Root Kids, that's for sure.
Definitely. No, but I think that there's stuff that, I mean, When you say that, like it does, it's not mainstream music, but it's like a catchy song. Like my favorite thing like that is like the Misfits, where it's like Brian Wilson class pop melodies, but most people wouldn't know, how fucking great those melodies are, because you're not hearing it in a context that you're used to hearing, like a melody. Like if that stuff was like produced like the Beatles, everyone would know that that was, fantastic melodies.
Yeah, the Misfits are simultaneously the greatest punk band ever and not at all a punk band.
Yeah, not quite following you there.
Well, you got like this, like you're saying, like some of the greatest punk songs ever written. But the fact is, he's trying to write Brian Wilson melodies and sing them like Elvis. There are a bunch of He-Man dudes that are working out, singing about science fiction. Like it's so anti everything that's punk's supposed to be, yet it's somehow the perfect
I
punk.
think that's why it's punk. For me, punk was like about doing your own thing and stuff, and them being, kind of so far from what people was like accepted in punk, or like, where it's like you're supposed to be this and that and the other, and the Misfits are like they don't even know what you're talking about. They just keep going
Yeah.
straight ahead. Like, yeah, they're like, yeah, and even like the fact that people who were around at the time like kind of felt like they were corny and stuff, and that like just kind of makes me love them more. Like, I feel like I'm on their side, like, you fucking nerd bullies complaining about the Misfits, like you don't know anything.
It's like Crass in Kiss clothing or Kiss in Crass clothing or something.
Yeah, maybe, and it's so homemade, like you there it looks like there's dreams of a stadium, but it's so like
Yes.
boy room homemade, basement crafting, like these superhero outfits and stuff. I think that stuff is amazing. And some of the like arguably some of the best, the most influential cover art in all of punk.
Yeah, aesthetically, like they were the whole first half of their career was prologue for this moment that they're in right now, where they can finally do the stadium rock thing and have it not look out of place at like Max's Kansas City or something on stage.
I mean, I love them. That's like easily top three, top five punk band for me.
Were they like an early influence? Like, I was listening to the very first EP you guys put out, and I was trying to place like who your influences would have been on that first thing.
It was that, and it was, I mean, this we liked the Misfits. We liked a lot of kind of more, I was a big hard-ons fan. We
Love them.
liked them. And but I think also like Nicholas was like trying to play swing guitar on top of it, but like a distorted swing guitar.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a bit all over the place. But there was like Ramones influences and Misfits, like and the Kennedys, I think. Like we liked all that stuff. But also more, yeah, we really liked Rancid's first album. Because that was more like the what we thought like punk was, as opposed to other stuff on Epitaph, which we thought was like, it's good music and stuff, but I'm sure this is like punk rock the way we've thought of as like Misfits and Dead Boys and stuff, and the perfect harmonies and really clean sounding and stuff. Like Rancid felt like Rancid and New Bomb Turks even more so felt like that was like punk as we. As we liked it again, more kind of the 77 type punk, I suppose.
You guys are like a fish swimming upstream, I guess, with that at that time in Sweden, because like it feels like I know you said that was trall punk, but it feels like there's like almost like post that band Super Dong, like a wave of bands doing like Epiphat style, like you're saying, perfect
Yeah, and especially
melodies.
like the Burning Heart bands, like No Fun At All and Millencolin and that stuff, that they were really big in Sweden. Like they were influencing everybody, I think. And I think Superdome was parallel to that, like in a different city, like. But and there was these combinations called Really Fast that had like you could basically pay to be on this compilation and hear your song on a real album, and we would buy those because they were cheap, and they'd have like 10 bands from different regions in Sweden, and I think if you like listen through them from like 1 to 14 or however many there were, at the end of it, there's definitely more of that kind of Epitaph sound. Or Fat Record sound coming in.
you just blew my mind that that was a pay-to-play compilation. I had no idea that's how it worked. I was like,
I
what a
think
weird
so. I guess he had to accept you, but I think you had to like,
contribute.
I don't pretend to know exactly the financials of it, but I think you like paid a bit of money, ended up on it. You got a little square where you could like write your address, and then you got a few copies of it that you could sell to your friends. And I think that's kind of how it worked. But I mean, he wouldn't put something on that he didn't like, I assume. But you can kind of see, I think if you listen to all those in a row, that's kind of like the development of Swedish punk through the 80s and 90s, because that's where some of it, and it's like easy, like, 101, what happened in Swedish punk.
Yeah, because that Superdong song I remember hearing on one of them. I think it's like, God, like 10 or something. It blew my mind. It was just like I could not believe that that was a that was there, and that was like that was the first thing I heard like that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, do you know that that's Pelle who records our albums, that he was in that band?
No, I thought it was dudes from Breach. Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, he
Oh,
was, I mean, they're from the same town, so he was in there,
that's
and someone
amazing.
from Breach, and I think even Christopher from Fireside might be singing on it. I'm not sure exactly what the thing was, but Superdong was like Pelle's band when he was trying to sound like California punk before he started sounding like Quicksand, I suppose.
I
Talented dude.
could talk to you forever, and I've been given the call sign to
Me
wrap it
too.
up. Well, I've been anytime you want to come. Don't make it 13 years before the next time we see each other, please. Let's
Well, I mean, we didn't make a record for 11 out of those, so
that's
it's,
true. Well, you're still invited.
we
You
didn't
could
have a lot to talk about.
what you and me could talk about the Rude Kids for an hour just on
Yeah,
its
we could do
own.
that. Sure, man. No problem. I like talking about that stuff.
Before I let you go, what were you a professional wrestling fan at all? Did you watch wrestling?
And I even, during the pandemic, I even ran a pro wrestling thing in Sweden.
I
Like,
did not know that.
wrote characters and scripts and stuff. I loved that stuff. When I was like 10 and the kids that lived in apartments got cable, I would sleep over at their house every Thursday and watch wrestling. I love that stuff. I think, arguably some of the stuff we do on stage is like Ric Flair or whatever, it was just so fun. It was like the least Swedish thing on earth, so it's like the most American thing there is, and that's why I loved it, I think, growing up so far from America.
So I wanted to know your thoughts then
Kind of like the
on,
Misfits. Like, I like it
yes.
for the same reasons as the Misfits. Like,
And
there, you can be a snob about it, but it's amazing.
have you ever watched the Misfits do their wrestling thing in WCW when they wrestled?
No, I haven't really, no.
Oh, Jerry only does not fare well against Dr. Death Steve Williams, who turns into a bit of a shoot in the middle of the ring. And
All right.
but I what were your thoughts when, first of all, Walk Idiot Walk got used as a theme, but then they used it for these poor divas during the Diva Search as their entrance music, of all the songs to make someone walk out to.
Oh yeah, that's mean. I never thought about it
It's
that
always like, why are they doing these people?
way. Yeah, but I don't know how. I'm not sure I know that women were always treated nice in professional wrestling.
Very true, sadly. Very, very true. Well, anytime you want to come back here and be treated nice, I promise I will always treat you nice here, and you are always welcome.
Can always trust the Canadians with that. Thanks, man. I'll see you soon.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Stephen at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Stephen.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.